Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Beat.
Good evening, fantasy baseball fans. Mike Carter here from the Fantasy Baseball Beat, along with my co-host Dave Funnel. Chris Torres is taking a well-deserved night off tonight. It is Thursday, and Dave and I are going to talk about some articles that we've been reading this week and talk about some players that we've picked up that we have been very excited about in some of the deeper leagues that we play in, and just kind of have a free-form jazz odyssey conversation, as I say at school. Dave, how are you doing tonight, man? It's been a long week.
It's been a long week, but I'm good now because we get to get together. We get to talk baseball, and that's my mental health. So let's do it.
Yeah, let's talk about some baseball. Dave, we were talking off air a little bit before we started to record about Rafael Devers and the latest news with him out of Boston. Is this story just getting crazier as we get further into the season or what? You know, we have a guy that has been the primary third baseman for the Red Sox for the past few seasons. The team signs Alex Bregman. There's all this controversy surrounding what position he's going to play. And then we had the Tristan Casas injury this week, which was really unfortunate. But talk a little bit about what's going on with Devers there in Boston and what you saw today.
Yeah, so the latest thing today was, you know, with the Tristan Casas injury, they need a replacement at first. And he came out when he was asked if, you know, he would like to be first baseman. And I forget who it was. It was someone within the organization was talking with him. And Devers flat out said, no, I'm here to be, you know, your DH now. And he kind of brought up the fact that, you know, he was asked to be not their third baseman, not pick up a glove. And now he's being asked to maybe pick up that glove again. So he kind of feels a little, I don't know if he's a little jaded or if he's a little upset or what it is, but there's something a little bit weird. Now, I get the one side of it, you know, like picture you being at work at your job and then you're asked to do this and then you're asked to do that and not do this. How would you feel, right?
Right.
So I get that aspect of it. But at the end of the day as well, you're also there to help the place where you're at, regardless of your job. And if it means doing a little bit extra here, a little bit extra there, I don't know. I've always been a proponent of just stepping up a bit and trying, you know, to help out as best you can. But right. It really seems like he is against being a first baseman. And he flat out said, go look for one on the market.
Yeah, his exact quote today, Christopher Smith on X, who goes by at Smitty on MLB, has a quote here that said, the Devers said, I know I'm a ball player, but at the same time, they can't expect me to play every single position out there. In spring training, they talked to me and basically told me to put away my glove, that I wasn't going to play any other position. And then to your earlier point, Dave, he said they should, quote unquote, hit the market for a first baseman, unquote.
Yeah, that's
– it's tough, right? I mean, I understand his viewpoint, right? I mean, he was the third baseman. They signed somebody who's a way better third baseman than he is. He initially balked at playing anywhere else. Bregman offered to play second base from what we heard. And that they didn't want to do that, rightfully so. And now you have a situation where they could really use a leader and somebody to step up at first base. And now they're looking at what are they going to do? Go to Romy Gonzalez, Abraham Toro, perhaps Anthony Rizzo situation at first base. I mean, that leaves a lot to be desired. I see it both ways. As an employer, I would say, wow, you're my employee and you're going to play where I tell you to play. And then as a star athlete, as he is, who's been, you know, nursing off a shoulder injury here for the on and off for the last 2 years, I see his viewpoint too about how many times are you going to ask me to change in a year. Dave, any news on his shoulders? I mean, is there anything out there that has been coming up at all? I know that was something we talked about in the off season when both you and Torres criticized my pick of Rafael Devers.
I'll take the L on that because
no.
But I had him on a team and I didn't want him. I got outbid. Tried to bid somebody up and it just didn't work. So I ended up trading him because I thought that he would be injured. I thought that by now he would be injured. And we saw at the beginning of the season, His decisions were off. His bat speed was way down, like it was last year.
Right.
And he's picked it up. I mean, he's hitting the ball hard. He's getting on base, and he's a good batter at the plate. He makes good decisions. So he's going to walk and he's going to do that. But at the end of the day, it might be something. And I don't know if this is, you know, conspiracy Dave coming out here, but it might be him not wanting to actually play with a glove anymore. Mm-hmm. Because maybe it is the throwing and, you know, the grabbing of the ball and the pivoting and moving that really makes him, I think he might know that he could be injured at any point, and doing something like that might actually, you know, propel that injury going further. And I think part of the reason why the Red Sox want him to not pick up a glove is because they know this as well. Mm-hmm. And they're unfortunately stuck with someone, Masataka Yoshida.
There you go.
He's getting paid a lot of money, but he can't play. He is a designated hitter, but he can't throw. So they don't know what to do right now. They have somebody that they can't play, but they can't move Devers away because they know that he's going to get injured as well. I don't know if that's conspiracy Dave coming out here or what. that's my two cents.
I don't think it's a conspiracy. I mean, here's the thing that I think really sucks if I were Alex Cora, is that you've got a guy that could really help you play in first base. Now, you could be right. They might want to just keep him away from anything that has to do with throwing or putting himself in harm's way on the field. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there calling for, you know, Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer to come up and help the Red Sox out. And if he were to play first base, that would open up a potential outfield spot for Anthony where somebody else could DH then. And so I understand where they're at. I mean, it's not like they have somebody else on the roster really that they can go with. I mean, Alex Cora said nice things about Romy Gonzalez the other night, but I mean, come on. I mean, that's just not going to keep up all year. I mean, he's a utility guy.
The only one I will say, though, in the minor leagues, what's his name? Vaughn Grissom is getting first base reps.
That's your guy.
Who knows? Who knows what he'll be?
You were a big Vaughn Grissom guy last year.
I do love the guys up the middle who can just get on base, and he did it for a while, but
he did
not anymore.
Yeah, that ship appears to have sailed, David.
it was a one-way ship out of here.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting situation that they have in Boston there for sure. It'll be really kind of fun to watch how that plays out. We'll have to talk to our friend Chris Cotillo about that here in the coming weeks. Mm-hmm. Dave, shifting gears a little bit, wanted to ask you, who's a player that you've added through waivers this season that has made a really strong contribution for your team? You know, we talk all the time on the show and also in our group chat about, you know, that constant churn that you have at the bottom of your roster, right? Like, you know, the last two or three guys on your roster that you're constantly kind of going through based on matchups, based on injuries or whatever. Who's a guy that you've added this year that has been really solid for you in the early going?
My guy is, and it might turn out to be even better than it is right now, but it's, I want to make sure I pronounce it right. Ben Kasperius. Is it Kasperius?
Kasperius.
My apologies. Yes. So I picked him
up. He's listening right now. So you want to make sure you get his name right.
I'm so sorry, Ben.
sorry, Ben.
No, he came in as a reliever, and I noticed him actually for Thomas Nestico, friend of the show. Mm-hmm. He does some great work with bullpen arms who are just good at what they do, like just great stuff, results, and they're not even like saves or holds worthy. He's just great pitchers. So I noticed him, and he worked out really well for my home league as a points league guy. And now he's been pitching like two or three innings at a time, and he might even be thrown into the rotation. So I picked him up he was free off the waiver wire. And I mean, right now he's 26.9% K rate, 4.8% walk rate. That's pretty darn good. for someone who might be thrust into the starter's role for the Dodgers down the road. So,
yeah, he's been really an interesting guy. You know, the Dodgers really in the early going, their bullpen was held together by these young guys that nobody was really anticipating being on the roster, except you heard Dave Roberts talk about it in his press conferences about how they expected guys like Kasperias to be stepping up and helping out with that. And they really could use him. I mean, as you pointed out, the Dodgers have a series of injuries. I know we'll talk about that in a little bit with one of the other articles that we're talking about, but definitely Kasperias is a guy that has helped a lot of people so far and probably will continue to help teams moving on in the future. My guy that I added, and I did it with some trepidation at first, was Matthew Liberatore, the lefty for the Cardinals. You know, you look at his StatCast stuff and you realize that one of the reasons why he's being very successful right now is that his walk rate is absurdly low at 3.8%. His K rate is not great. It's a little bit above average at 23.8%. So you subtract those two from each other, you got a K minus walk of 20, which is pretty darn good. He's got a pretty good chase rate going on right now at 32.2%. He's getting ground balls, and he's keeping guys off base and off balance. But what I really like about him, I got a chance to see him last weekend, or earlier this week, I'm sorry. I had a friend who was at his start when he faced off against Paul Skeens, and he actually out-dueled Paul Skeens on Monday night, I think it was. But what I like about Liberatore is that he has a really, really strong pitch mix. A lot of people don't recognize that or don't know that about him, but he has six different pitches that he throws at least 8% of the time, mostly his slider and his four-seamer, but he also spots in a sinker and a cutter and a change, and he's really keeping guys off balance. Now, if you're looking for a guy, you know, we talk about this all the time. When you're picking guys up off of the waiver wire, you know, you're not going to find guys that are you know, going to give you everything, right? They're not going to give you everything that they got. So Liberatore maybe doesn't have the high K percentage that you would like for somebody, but he's keeping ratios down, and he's somebody that's getting some wins. He's done a really nice job within the seven starts that he's made so far. And so I've been really impressed with him, and he's a guy that I have really enjoyed having so far on my roster. So, well, I have a late-breaking development here. We have a third person has added himself to the mix. He was listening, and he couldn't stand the fact that I was hosting for 15 minutes. The loss of control became too much for our good friend Christopher Torres. Torres, welcome to the party, pal.
I couldn't take it.
I figured
that you were steering the ship today. It was eating me alive, so I had to come on. Part of the reason I'm here as well is I had to talk to you today, Mike. We've got a Pope from Chicago.
We do.
I mean, I need your thoughts on that, because that is like, I know you're just talking Cardinals. I feel like that's a good segue into some Pope discussion.
Cardinals and the Pope. Matthew Liberatore is the new Pope's favorite pitcher. Yeah. We were talking about free agent additions that we made to our roster that have been really helpful to us so far. But yes, I can confirm the Pope is from Chicago, born and raised on the far south side of Chicago. And get this, his family went to social media tonight to announce that he is in fact a White Sox fan. It was misreported that he was a Cubs fan. And they came out right away and said, no. The new Papa is a Sox fan. So I started praying, and the Sox still lost 10-0 today anyway.
that's not a good sign for secrecy, right?
I said, Papa, we need to figure out the top of this batting order. I don't know what's going on here. We got Chase Meidroth and Miguel Vargas. We got trouble. So that's kind of cool. First American Pope of ever. And he's from the Chicago area. Yep. Very cool.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
For sure.
An American Pope. It feels weird. Like, we just haven't, obviously, this is the first one. A good tweet I saw, I sent to you guys. It said, call me a traditionalist, but the Pope should be from an Italian village that my grandmother would yell at me for mispronouncing. He should not have consumed Malort or gone to a Big East school. It just doesn't feel right.
There are crazy memes going on, right? All right.
Oh, like Twitter's on fire today.
Okay,
like, there's many good ones.
The one that I just got has nothing to do with baseball, but I have to share it with you guys because this is hysterical. Time taken to get picked. Next new Pope, 2 days. Shador Sanders, 3 days. Oh man. I got so many to send you guys later on about the Bears and the White Sox with the Pope. It's gonna be great. So Torres, not to get us too far off the subject, but why don't you add into this conversation here? We were talking about a player that we added from waivers that has been a super boon to our teams. And Dave mentioned Ben Kasperius, and I mentioned Matthew Liberatore. Who's the guy for you that's been huge?
Kyle Stowers. He's been a real nice find. And I was on him in the offseason just because he was going around pick 500, 600 in some of these early DCs. And I just saw, like, he hit the ball hard. And at that point in the draft, that's all I'm really looking at. Like, someone who has kind of a standout skill. And I knew he could provide power. I knew he was going to get playing time in the Marlins. I didn't think he'd be batting second, right, and playing pretty much every day, even against left-handers. I figured, he's a short, strong side platoon player. But I mean, he is really tapped into that potential that we knew he had coming up through the Orioles system, and he's been a great pickup for me. He's been helping me quite a bit in tout, which I'm happy to report. Actually, did get a win last week. I know I told you guys I was struggling, and had a really nice win last week. Beat Ariel Cohen in my head-to-head matchup, so feeling good. He was, I believe, he was undefeated at the time too. So I got like 4 home runs from Stowers last week. So that was pretty sweet.
That's awesome. But,
So he's definitely been a boon for my teams. He's almost, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. He's almost like a carbon copy of 2024 JJ Bleday. And what I mean by that is he was a guy who was going around pick 500 who, you know, was going to be on a bad team, was going to get an opportunity finally, after having having that prospect pedigree, and, you know, had just figured it out. And now I will probably Bleday's turned it on lately. He's been a disappointment overall, though. So hopefully, you know, I imagine Stowers will probably be going in like that 250 range that Bleday went this year. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know if I'll be in on him at that price, but definitely for those who got him off of waivers or late in drafts, they are reaping the rewards this year.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, that's a really good pickup. I have him in my tout team as well, but my tout team is struggling right now. We just have so many injuries. It's just been kind of a nut situation so far. So, those are good ones to mention there. Dave, we talked a little bit offline too, and Chris as well. We found some beat writer articles that we wanted to share. And Dave, I know that you thought that you were going to hurt me or somehow make fun of me because of your article that you chose. You picked Javier Baez. Talk a little bit about what you read there and what that article was about.
Yeah, I thought you were going to shoot me down here, but we'll see. So I brought up something from February 16th. It's an article that talked about how Javier Baez came back from surgery. So here's my case for Javier Baez, and then you guys shoot me down. You let me know. So it made notes that he came into camp each year, and every time he came back, he got knocked down a peg. He was like their star signing, and then he was maybe a bounce back, and then he was on the decline, and then the lowest of low. So he opted for his hip procedure last September, and then he saw his team, he saw them do well without him, and it hurt him, he said. So he got, he had hip discomfort for years. It plagued him for years there and in his lower back. And he initially wanted to wait till the off season, but seeing that the team was doing well, he wanted to come back early and help them out next year. So here's what stood out to me in the article. It said, "I'm hard-headed," Baez said.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, please. I know somebody like that as well. Go ahead.
there's many of them. He goes, he asked if he had wished he had had his surgery earlier. He said, "I tried never to have the surgery, but honestly, it helped me out." He said after the surgery, he was actually able to sit up straight. He actually felt balanced. And I don't know about you, but I think those are two pretty important things for a baseball player.
I would say.
So then he attributed all of his struggles to the last 2 years because of his injury. He said he took a patient approach on this. He didn't want to rush things. He worked hard in the offseason. And he said that because of all of that, he was rotating better and had more flexibility in his hips. So I don't know. I'm looking at his stats right now. I'm looking at the underlying. I don't see much difference. I see, you know, like a slightly more pitches in the zone, slightly less chase. Nothing major, though. And he's still pulling the ball the same that he was. He has a higher ground ball rate. Barrel rates are less. I don't know if he's someone to buy. But if he hasn't changed his approach, and the only thing that's changed is him actually healthy, could we actually see the Cubs and Mets version of him? So I did some digging. In August 2021 is when he got that injury. He came back. He did okay. He finished that year with 31 home runs, 18 stolen bases, .265. Since then, he, excluding this year, 32 home runs, 29 stolen bases, .221. Do you think we could get somewhere in between that?
No. No. The other reason I came on was because I saw you guys talking about Javi Baez, and I needed to come on to dispel any idea that Javi Baez is the Javi Baez of old. He's on a really nice run right now. And, you know, it's cool to see someone who was an afterthought, right? I mean, pretty much this was someone going, I think I got him in round 50 of DC, which is like pick 750. Nobody wanted him. So to see him even being relevant is cool to see, you know, something you root for. But I think what we're seeing is really just a string of good fortune here. You look at all, like you were alluding to, Dave, the underlying numbers.
Yeah.
I mean, indicate that he's been super lucky. He's got a batting average on balls in play of .394. That's obviously unsustainable. His hard hit percentage is one of the lowest I've seen. Now, there are two different hard hit percentages. There's one that StatCast. I don't know quite the difference between how they calculate the two of these, but I've been using the one that FanGraphs puts out in their batted ball section of their player pages. Been using that forever. So I reference that more just because I kind of have a better idea of you know, how that scales. For Javi Baez, one of the lowest I've seen over this big of a sample, 17% hard hit rate. He's also hitting the ball on the ground 51%.
Yeah.
So the combination of that makes it, I mean, that's not a hitter that, you know, is going to be fantasy relevant. And it's not like he's making way more contact. I mean, we're pretty much seeing the same, a little less swing and miss. I mean, he's at 13.7% this year.
But nothing major.
Nothing major. The O swing, which has always been an issue with Javi Baez, is still way up there at 38%. So I'm not seeing any major improvements there. He's not stealing. I mean, that was the other big thing with Javi Baez. This was someone who can give you 15 to 20 stolen bases. He's got one in 105 plate appearances. So it's not like he's going to be a major stolen base asset. So, and the other thing is, too, he's playing center field, and the Tigers are going to get some players back. Meadows, who, you know, you can speak to these better than I can, Dave, but Meadows and Matt Vierling, like when these guys come back, I don't know if you're looking at an everyday player. So, what you've gotten from Baez, I think, is as good as it's going to get. It was really nice to pick him up for this week while he was in Coors Field. But I think if, you know, in a 15-team league, I guess you just ride it out for now. But anything shallower than that, I don't think Baez is really a factor.
Yeah, he looked good in Colorado this week. I was watching the Colorado and Pittsburgh game last night. He actually looks really good in center field too. He made a couple of nice running catches out there last night.
Playing good defense, yep.
You know, so I mean, that might be a chance to stay in the lineup. But he's produced with really bad underlying stats before, so we'll have to see. I mean, I think the playing time is going to end up being the biggest issue, quite honestly, like you said, Chris. Mm-hmm. So The article that I chose was about another guy that I've taken many, many shares of over the years, and that's Gavin Lux. And the article was written by Mark Sheldon, and the title of it was Patient Approach Fueling Lux's Elite Plate Discipline. And we were just talking about stats. You know, Lux is not putting up great counting stats. He's only got one home run and one stolen base, but he's currently hitting .302 with a .396 OBP, which is good for the top 10 in the National League right now. And his chase percentage is in the 100th percentile right now at 14.8%. His strikeout rate is 23.1%, so that's not great, but his walk rate is 13.4%. So it's a guy who's getting on base and not giving away at bats. And the article that Mark wrote talked a little bit about coming from Los Angeles and learning the veteran mindset of going after pitches in the at bat, right? And talking about, you know, the first two pitches are mine and the last pitch is his, but if I can stay alive and see more pitches, then I'm helping the team. And he doesn't expand the strike zone. You know, the guy does not swing at junk. He's in a little bit of a funk right now. He's been in a 1-for-21 slump here, but he's still a guy that's on waiver wire very often in the league. And he's only 27. Doesn't it feel like he should be 35? You know, he feels like he's been around forever, but he's having a nice season. I definitely think with the way that Cincinnati is deploying him, and if he can keep those chase percentage and walk percentage gains, you know, you're looking at a guy that's not going to hit 300, but a guy that could hit 270 and give you double-digit home runs and double-digit stolen bases with continued playing time, which looks like he's going to get right now. So that's kind of a cool thing. I'm happy for him, and I'm glad that he's finding some success in Cincinnati. With that, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we will be right back with more Fantasy Baseball Beat with our third guy who miraculously joined about 15 minutes ago. We'll see you on the flip side after this break. Okay, we're back. I'm driving Taurus crazy.
You're doing great, buddy.
No, I'm just kidding. We found an article by our friend Eno Saris, who's been on the show a couple of times with us, and there was an article that he wrote this week about some statistics that are showing some alarm for analysts in the fantasy baseball industry. It was written in The Athletic and by proxy the New York Times earlier this week. Dave, I'm going to kick it to you first. You know, there was about 10 different things in that article that Eno pointed out that were reasons for potential concern. What was something that you read in that article that was concerning to you as well?
Yeah. So, yeah, Eno went over 10 different small samples from the beginning of the season that could, you know, point to some concern. And two of them really stood out to me. And the first one was about the Dodgers, about how they only had, as of time of this writing, 157 innings by starters. So, to put that into context, they were just behind the Royals for the second lowest, and it's going to be they're on pace to have, you know, some of the lowest of all time. And this goes back to something that, I mean, I had my concerns about them in the offseason. I had concerns from them from top to bottom, and a major concern for me was their pitching, specifically their rotation. Since the season started, we've had Ohtani stop throwing altogether. He's only recently started back throwing from a mound twice a week, but that's only really just to keep his arm loose enough. There's no real plan for him to come back. We've had Glasnow and Snell, who one we had concerns about, the other one not so much, but here we are. They both have shoulder inflammation, and they both taken cortisone shots. We don't know when either of them will be back. And right now we have Yamamoto and Sasaki. You're relying on two guys who excel and stay healthy when they have six full days of rest, dating back to when they were overseas. Now, maybe Yamamoto, he might be able to sustain a little bit more without 6 days rest because he's already been here a year. But these are really major concerns for a World Series defending and contending team. And right now they're relying on, well, Ben Kasperius, who we already talked about. And you're relying on Gonsolin and Dustin May. I don't know how long that can last. So far, they've been successful, but that's for now. But those bullpens are going to get used and overused and overused. And those arms are going to start to falter. The options of their prospects are going to run through. So they might have to make some trades before the deadline in order to replenish this, because otherwise I don't see it sustaining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Chris, anything you want to add to that?
No, I mean, I know you guys talked about Ben Kasparius, and I'm kicking myself that I didn't pick him up earlier. He went for a hefty price in main events. I bid like around $80, and I thought that was pretty competitive, and he was well into the hundreds. So,
yeah,
he's a guy. We'll see. I mean, you know, Kershaw will be back, I think, soon, right? I think he's got one more rehab start. And then Glasnow, we'll see. So, you know, but they're stretching him out. And, I mean, those guys could come back, and I wouldn't be shocked if you know, they lose someone else. They just have a lot of very fragile arms. So I think he's going to be a factor all season. So he's probably out there in a lot of 12s at this point, and I think definitely worth a pickup. Mm-hmm. I wanted to highlight, I was just pulling up the article, and one of the things that Eno highlighted was about Michael Toglia. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to, you know, talk about that for a second, because he's been a major, major disappointment. I know we talked about him with Thomas Harding when he was on, but, you know, he's maintaining that everyday PT, which really was one of the appeals of drafting him, because he played, I think, literally every day last season after he came up from the minors. So we felt confident in the PT, but man, the numbers that he's displaying this year, what Eno talked about specifically was the significant decline in hard hit rate. And I mean, listen, the swing and miss is always going to be there for Toglia. I don't think that's changing. But if he's not a guy that's really impacting the ball and is not like a true slugger, I mean, then it's really dicey as to what his future is as an everyday player and in the league. So that is definitely something to watch. I mean, just looking here, it looks like his hard hit rate's down 10%. Barrel rate is down 7%. So again, you know, that's really got to be in that, you know, 15% barrel rate, like, and above, and a 50% hard hit rate, in my opinion, for him to be like a viable everyday player, and a guy who you're going to want in fantasy. So definitely, I think in 12s at this point, I'm probably a lot of people are cutting bait. And I don't see any reason, you know, to dispute that. And the Rockies are just so bad. Oh, my God. That offense is terrible. Mm-hmm. I tweeted the other day about how, you know, I feel like all of us, when someone goes to Coors, like a pitcher goes on the road to Coors, we've always been leery about starting them there. Right. This year, I think we might actually be like actively streaming pitchers in Coors against the Rockies. They're so bad. Like for a minute, like Casey Mize pitched today. And like earlier this past weekend when I was deciding what I was going to do, I was like, is Casey Mize, like, is he above that threshold of someone that I'd pitch in Coors Field? And I ultimately decided to, and that turned out to be the right call. I mean, he shoved. And, you know, it's like, at this point, they're so bad, the field doesn't even matter. Like, you're going to get a ton of strikeouts. They strike out way more than any other team, and they just got nothing. They have absolutely nothing on that team. So that's another tip there. Do not be scared of Coors Field any longer.
No kidding. No kidding. That's for sure. The point that I wanted to bring up in Eno's article was about – I hate to beat up on him because we did it last week too, but it was Yusei Kikuchi, who is minus 10 in Steph Plus since last year. And Eno points out in there all the things that we were talking about last week, really, that, you know, the fastball does not look the same, less velocity. His slider's got less drop to it, which was his big pitch last year in Houston. And, you know, the thing is, you know, I'm taking the L on this one, because Kikuchi was a guy that I thought, wow, you know, if you get him as your number three starter in some of these deeper leagues, he'd really be ahead of the game. He's going to get a lot of strikeouts. He's going to use that slider the same way that he did in Houston. He's just not looked the same. His changeup is 2 miles an hour slower than what it was. Curveball slower as well, less break. I actually decided last weekend after we were talking in our group chat to cut ties with Kikuchi last weekend, which really hurt. I try not to fall in love with a player, but this was a guy this year that I thought was going to have a pretty good success, even on a bad team. And I have been proven to be incredibly wrong about that. So that was what I picked from that one. It was a great article by Eno. If you guys have not read it yet, make sure that you get a chance to take a look at that. It is a really good one, and it's not a very long read. It won't take you very long to get through. You can read it in the morning with your coffee while you're getting ready to go to work. So we talked about that article, and all three of us gave you some points on that. We're going to take a quick ad break, and we are going to come back and discuss our mental health moment with you. We'll see you on the flip side. Okay, and we're back. Guys, it's been a long week. There's been a lot of stuff going on. We've talked about it in our group chat. I know that you guys are running on fumes the same way that I am. You know, we're getting near to the end of the school year. It's been a trying week for me at school. I know that you guys have both had kind of the same thing too. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you guys about, you know, we're all dads. We're all working hard. We have multiple gigs that we're doing to bring in money for the family, trying to also be good husbands and good fathers and good people to the folks around us. And we talk a lot on here about our mental health and what we're doing to kind of restore ourselves and what we're doing to, you know, make sure that we stay sharp and keen in a world that a lot of times when you put the news on, looks like it's falling apart. And what I wanted to ask you guys tonight was, what is something that you do to spoil yourself? Now, Torres, we know you drink bone broth and rub garlic all over your scalp and sleep with your mouth taped shut and dress up as Grimace and terrify the neighbors. But what is something that you guys do every now and again to treat yourself to something nice or to something that you like doing? Now, remember, it's a PG show, so we don't want to get into anything that's too crazy here. But we know that it's important to take care of ourselves and also to reward ourselves for something good that we do. Chris, I'm going to start with you first. What's something that you do to pamper yourself or treat yourself when you can?
I wasn't prepared for this, but I don't do it enough, but one of my favorite things to do is either to go to get a massage and a PG massage, not an R-rated one.
Okay.
Either a massage or, you know what I really love is, you ever gotten the reflexology where they do those pressure points on your feet? I don't know if there's anything really to that. I mean, do you know what it is at least?
I know what it is, but I'm afraid to go do something like that because I'm afraid I like might poop myself. You know what I mean? Like I get too relaxed and everything just releases. You know, that would be a real problem.
Right. So for anybody who doesn't know, it's kind of like an Eastern practice, and their belief is that there are different pressure points on your feet that are connected to different organs in your body. And they have like a whole chart and everything. And, you know, this pressure point is supposed to stimulate your kidney or your liver or whatever. Again, I don't know if there's anything to that, but it's been around a long time. So I kind of, you know, something that's lasted that long, I put some stock into. But either way, it's relaxing. You know, they sit there and massage your feet. It can actually hurt a little bit sometimes because they like really press on some points. That is like, I find that just super relaxing. You know, they put the nice music on, they rub, you know, it's just like at a minimum, you're getting a nice foot rub. So I like that massage. I haven't done it in a long time, but, I think my wife is going to get me for Father's Day a certificate to get a pedicure. You know, I'm not going to pay nails, but you know, just like, again, like the foot rub and just the whole process of it is relaxing. So stuff like that is, I think when I think of like pampering myself, you know, that's kind of what I think of.
Well, you know, what's funny is that I think, you know, a lot of guys, when you talk about getting a pedicure, kind of like turn their nose up.
They're like, it's not,
you know, it's not manly. I don't want somebody I don't want somebody playing with my feet or whatever it might be. Yeah. And it's like, you totally got that wrong, dude. Pedicures are fantastic.
Yeah.
For and sure.
Just like touch. Like, I mean, that is, you know, in and of itself, very therapeutic. You're getting a massage. Like, that is stimulating hormones that, like, your oxytocin helps you feel good. So, yeah, I mean, I know not everybody likes that for various reasons, but if you're able to do it, it's I definitely think it's a great thing to do to just kind of just relax and de-stress.
Absolutely. I love that. Dave, same question to you. What's something that you do? I mean, I know you're a busy guy. You know, you're a kindergarten teacher. You're also a dad and a husband. You've had a lot of things going on with car accidents and all kinds of different things going on. What's something that you're doing to pamper yourself every once in a while, treat yourself to something good?
Okay. So I'm going to give you two things, one that I do a lot and then one that I don't do nearly as much as I would love to. One that I do a lot, I know I mentioned it on here. I go for steams all the time, and I make it into a whole ordeal now. I just walk in there. I just sit down. I let myself sweat. And then when I've had enough, I'll just get out and I'll, like, they have a shower with all different things, do a little shave, get rid of, do all the toxins and whatever. And I take my time and I make sure once a week I get to do that, where it's just, I'm not on the clock. I am just doing whatever I need to do. And it helps me finish off the weekend and get ready for the new week. So I love that. One thing that I don't do as often as I wish I could is smoke a good cigar.
Oh yeah.
I love a good cigar. I love the smell of it. I love the feel of it. I love just the holding of it. And it's just to relax, and you feel like a boss when you're smoking that cigar, and you're just, it helps too if you got something in a glass in the other hand as well, and you just go back and forth. But I haven't done that as often as I should, but that's what I like to do to spoil myself.
The weather is getting warmer now too, finally. So you can sit on that front porch and enjoy a good cigar. That would be wonderful. I have some here. I would love to share with you guys, but we're in three different parts of the world, so we don't get an opportunity to do that on a Saturday night. But some year we will be able to do that.
Yeah.
For me, you know, my life revolves around work. I have, you know, two jobs, as you guys know, and then I'm also coaching baseball on a couple of different teams, and trying to be dad. Daughter's getting ready to go to college. She just committed to University of Illinois last week, and, you know, that's pretty exciting and costly. And life has been moving at a very fast pace since January 1st for me. And I realized the other day, you know, we talk all the time in our group chat about, you know, what we're doing for ourselves and how things are going, and knowing that, you know, May is a stressful time of year. We jokingly in my house refer to it as May-cember. You know, it's like December without the holiday. It's just a super busy time when you work in schools and people are sick and, you know, getting ready for graduation and all this other stuff. And one thing that I had stopped doing for months was reading. And I love to read. I don't like nonfiction. I read fiction. I like to read other people's stories and their imagination. And I have a series of books that I got for Christmas. My mom always buys me books to read. And I really, over the last 4 or 5 months, had stopped reading. And so this past week, I decided that I was going to get back to my old habit of an hour before bed, when I can, not every night because I can't do that, but to read for an hour to be able to fall asleep. And what I've noticed with that is that this week, now it could just be because I'm dog tired too, but I noticed this week that I'm actually sleeping better. I'm sleeping more longer stretches and not getting up in the middle of the night to have to go to the bathroom like a 51-year-old guy has to do very often in the middle of the night. It's been really, really helpful to me to kind of hit that reset. And I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to carry that through over the next few weeks. Things do calm down for me in a couple of weeks after baseball season's done. By the way, need to shout out my Bulldogs. We had a really bad weekend last weekend. You guys know who you are. But we won on Monday against our bitter rival Geneva, and then we won tonight against St. Charles. We're 14-6 heading into a big weekend series with St. Charles East this weekend. We won today, put up a good one. Shout out my guy Liam Jensen, the catcher. get three hits today, big game today. Threw out a couple of runners last week as well. He's doing a great job behind the plate for us, and all the guys are doing a wonderful job. So just wanted to make sure I shout those guys out because they do listen to the podcast, even though they have no idea what the heck we're talking about because they don't play fantasy baseball yet. They're 15, you know. So anyway, come on, Mike. Guys,
you got it. 15 is old enough. Like you got to start introducing them here.
Well, I was playing at 15, you know, with pen and paper, but that was also because I was a dork who wasn't dating anybody at the time or doing anything that was
those guys are definitely cooler than you.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, they all have the word that they use. They all have auras, man. I have no aura. No. I'm working on it, but zero. But they say I got some aura. They like the drip, you know. No cap.
Of course.
All right, guys. Well, hey, with that, you know, happy Thursday. We're heading into the weekend here. We wanted to get a quick show in this week. Next week, we'll be back with Kurt Hogg, who was supposed to be with us tonight, but he had a situation mix up with his work, so he had to tend to that first and foremost. He'll be on with us next week to talk Brewers, and we will hotly debate Christian Yelich, I'm sure, who Torres hates. And no, I'm kidding. I always like to say that you guys hate guys, even though I know that you guys don't, even though you don't. But for Dave Funnell and Chris Torres, I'm Mike Carter for the Fantasy Baseball Beat. We will catch you next week. Have a good weekend. Take care of yourselves out there, and peace to all of you. Thank you.